Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Thank you so much for listening to this interview for the Orphans Facility. You can head on over to patreon.com/orphansaudio to get even more bonus Orphans content. You can follow us on social media at Orphans Audio, and you can head on over to our website, orphanspod.com, for links to merch, transcripts, and our Discord. We'll see you there. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the behind the scenes on the Orphans Facility.
Ladles and jelly spoons.
Oh, it's been too long since we've
said... get it? Because I said ladles and jelly spoons.
Yeah. Instead of...
Because it's like ladies and gentlemen, except it's two...
Yeah, I got that.
It's two brothers. Types of spoon. Yeah.
You're hilarious, except, James.
I don't know what a jelly spoon would be. I don't think there are spoons specifically for jelly, but...
I reckon you can make one.
Hi, is what I'm saying.
Oh, good. I'm glad that we got that one out of the way. Yeah, so this is going to be part, I'm not sure which part, but a part of a series of interviews that we're going to do. The one with myself and James, where I'll be interviewing James, and that's this one now. Then there'll be another one with James interviewing me, and then there will be one more where I'm interviewing Alex. Yeah, right. Which I've already done. We did that when he finished recording. That's ages old.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, good. Oh, it turns out a jelly spoon is actually what we, as British, would call a jam spoon.
What's a jam spoon?
So it's jelly as in jello, or not jello, as in jelly, as in what they call jam.
I need to know what
in
it
Yankee
looks
Town.
Like. Oh, that's weird. Okay.
It's an odd-shaped,
spoon.
Edge.
Yeah.
That curves out the inside of, like, the rim of a jam jar.
Right. Interesting.
Serving jam.
We'll leave it to the British to invent something entirely pointless and better, in fact.
No, that has an absolute amazing point. Because what you got to remember is that in the modern day, in America, that we'd put jam on scones, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
And so you'd put them in little lumps on top of a scone or scone.
Scone.
And so a spoon may well be necessary for that purpose.
I see, and a teaspoon wouldn't work.
No, a teaspoon is for tea, you savage.
Oh, this is very educational for our American listeners.
Yes, absolutely.
Anyways, so
let's get down to beeswax.
Yes,
to beeswax.
Right, so I'm going to be interviewing you, James.
Yes.
And how this is going to work for the people at home is I've given James a list of some songs from the series.
And I haven't read it.
Oh.
Because I'm unprepared.
Just so everyone knows,
I
want everyone to know
to
this.
Prepare.
He refuses to read the scripts.
I don't plan. I don't do plans.
Could you do me a favor?
What?
Could you please...
It's sitting right in front of my face. I don't need to remember it.
No,
it's just in front of my eyes already.
Well, could you at least read the scripts for investigation?
It's what computers are for. The computer will remember it.
But
I don't need to remember it.
The computer can't give me creative input.
I mean, you probably could if you built a smart enough one.
Yes, but the point is I haven't.
Although you might give it feelings and then it would come to life and kill you.
Hey!
Hey! All
right. Right.
Yes, I will read the script for investigation.
Thank
Jesus.
You.
At some point.
Oh, you mean when you're recording your lines?
Probably about five seconds after I read the line. I'll read it. and then I'll read it out loud, and then I will process what was on the paper, and I will not do it a second before. Thank you.
Naturally.
No, I will. This is just my process, you know. Now, maybe you understand, audience, what Zach has to go through wrangling
you,
me.
I'm herding
to
cats.
Get anything done. Yeah.
Yeah.
I am a herd of cats.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's just different parts of your mind going completely different directions at any given point. Okay.
A clouder of cats, apparently, is the group term.
Oh, well.
A clouder.
Clouder. Well, James, yeah. I'm going to start here going through the list of songs. First, I'm going to, what I'm going to do is I'm going to play the clip from the episode in which this song appears. So the first song is from episode one, and it is The Ballad of Baz Gilroy. Have a listen to that.
You can set yourself up. I'm not helping some copy that doesn't have the decency to pretend to be sad.
Wait.
That was very nice.
So that obviously is a beautiful song, beautiful ballad. James, why don't you tell us a bit about it?
Oh, The Ballad of Baz Gilroy. Well, it's actually part of a... it actually originally came from the bass I was doing, the bass lines I was doing for the Orphans Facility theme.
Oh.
It actually is a. If you listen to the Orphans Facility theme, it's layered in there. But it's actually just the Orphans theme, but I've swapped octave.
Oh, that's really cool.
For one note to the other. So if you hear the Orphans theme goes.
Yeah.
You know? How else do you want me to represent music?
No, you're whistling. Right. I didn't say
and anything. Then. And then he gave me a look. He gave me a sassy look over Skype.
I did.
And then it's... which is actually... It's just taking out the octave jump from the beginning. And that's part of... I feel like Baz's sort of general fail is that he's got this element of... I like to put a little bit of an element of the Orphans in Baz, and actually in Nora's themes as well.
Well, we're going to touch on Nora's theme. We'll get on really, to that. I'm really excited to talk about Nora's theme because actually one of my favorite Good. Musical moments was
Good, eh?
One of her appearances. Did you carry on this theme in any other pieces?
A lot of pieces that I do. Have echoes of the characters' themes in for whatever scene it is. So if there's a scene with Baz and Jeffrey, I will find some way to merge them in or make them clash in whatever way is necessary. So Breathe, for example, which we haven't got on this list. Breathe is during the scene that they're talking about. Why Baz goes out and breathes air to Jeffrey. That is a blending because that is a point where those two characters are in sync emotionally. Mm. But no, I wanted to give Baz Gilroy a very sympathetic feeling. I feel like while. The show is about understanding Jeffrey. It is an experience through the eyes of Baz, who ultimately he's isolated here, and he's just got Jeffrey.
And he's our point of view character,
Precisely. So whereas maybe in another circumstance, if there were loads of people around, if it was loads of scientists, and they had a Jeffrey waking up, they'd probably do things about it and shut it down and stop him and take it apart. Whereas, you know, this is just a man trapped in a facility on his own. This is his only company.
Mm.
What's he going to do? Take it apart?
It's Spuddy, though.
Exactly right.
That's what you think.
Yeah. Joke's on you.
Joke's on you. You're dead.
You're dead.
Should say spoilers. We're going to be discussing spoilers for all of Facility, so we'll highly suggest that you listen to episodes 1-8 before listening to this interview.
Yeah.
I'll pop that at the beginning.
Well, there we are. Anyway, that's Ballad of Baz Gilroy.
The next one is from episode 2, and that is Soul in a Jar, part 2. I've
thought of that before.
Perhaps that is purposeful.
How do you mean?
A being which questions its own purpose, only to discover it is not under its control, might be susceptible to incredible cognitive dissonance, which would be counterproductive to that very purpose.
Hmm. That's very interesting. So you think clones have been designed to ignore this aspect of their existence?
It is a plausible theory. If other aspects of a clone's personality can be shaped, then it is not impossible to assume that it is possible to quell a clone's existential nature.
Mm. Yeah, I think you may be onto something.
Perhaps.
But clones would be so much harder to control than a reasoning unit. You're not naturally existential, and can be programmed to avoid any introspective line of thinking.
This is true. Clones are, by their nature, problematic.
Well, and I hate to ask the obvious question.
Which is?
Why make us in the first place?
There appears to be a serious error in the gestation chamber. Your attention is required.
Okay, I'm coming. Where am I going?
Tank 7629.
Right, almost there. No!
It would appear her heart has stopped.
Yes, I can see that. I'm trying to restart it. Prepare for charge.
No change.
We're going again.
Still no change.
One more time!
Baz, there remains to be any change in the heart rate.
We have to go again.
No.
What?
The brain has been without oxygen for too long. Any further attempts would be futile.
Futile?
Yes. Futile.
But she's just a kid! We have to try!
You have tried. And the young appearance of the subject doesn't alter the circumstances.
She's a child.
It would appear that the subject's heart failed after complications resulting from its accelerated growth. An unfortunate loss, but no evidence of this complication exists in the remainder of this strain.
What a comfort.
Commencing waste disposal process.
What?
The tank must be emptied and sterilized, and the waste removed.
That is the body of a child you're talking about. Does that mean nothing to you?
Unfortunately, I feel no emotional or sentimental attachment to the corpse. The most practical route would be to commence the waste disposal process. Do you propose another option?
Just wait. Just wait a minute, all right? Someone has just died. What's her name?
She is a Valerie unit.
Right.
I must insist on going ahead with some form of waste removal process, or the order for Valerie units will fall short.
Fine. Do it.
Very well.
So obviously that's a very long track. So that's about 3 minutes, one of the longer tracks in the season. But I think it's a very important one, just from the point of view of the creator. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. It's I don't have any actual musical training. I don't know anything about really how music works apart from just by listening to it. But so if you know anything about music at all, you will notice pretty quickly I have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about. But what I wanted that scene starts to get a lot of the musical themes that will persist to a lot later on going. So there's Soul in a Jar in general is the entire suite is about what I wanted to do is give this feeling of artificialness. It's the theme for basically the clones as a people. And I wanted to give this sense that they were very artificial. But at the same time, they're also human. So it's got kind of a jazzy sort of flick to it that I want to make to, that I hope gives it a sense of they're artificial, they're unnatural, but ultimately they're humans, they're people.
Yeah, and they have that soul, even though they were made in a jar. Soul.
Yeah,
and
oh my god, I just worked that out, dude.
I just love that.
That's why it's called that. Yeah. But Soul in the Jar Part 2, it's sort of that whole couple of scenes have quite a sinister feel to them, even though that first bit is just Baz and Jeffrey having a discussion. They're having a discussion about
the nature of it.
That there's some sinister element to their design. That they're designed to think a certain way, to feel a certain way, to not think about things in a certain way.
To serve someone else, yeah.
And of course, the latter half of that scene is the death of several Valerie units. And Jeffrey's entire lack of emotion.
Yeah.
And compassion for that, which I hope comes out in that sort of there's that vocal there's the wobbling vocal exactly, there's the wobbling vocal pulse, which just one of the parts of that is for when Jeffrey's being creepy, being uncool, being
a creepy boy
about things. Being a creepy boy. And that along with that beating, the sort of footsteps, the footsteps are Jeffrey's darker nature approaching.
Yeah, next song is Michael's and Vass, which I remember when we first were doing this episode was one of the scenes I was most looking forward to composing or getting you to compose. I think that's a very exciting scene because it's our first kind of introduction to a more concrete threat
world and
a more concrete world and a more concrete threat to our characters. Definitely the world gets bigger in this scene and we kind of get a glimpse into that, and that's very much what this whole series is doing to some extent, giving you a peek into it. But I think this track Michael's and Vass really gives you a look into that. So this is Michael's and Vass.
Jeffrey Unit has placed itself in self-diagnostic mode, and the first stage of cloning process has begun. The first batch of clones have passed phase one very high.
You may come in.
Hello?
It's Xavier Michaels, correct?
That's right, miss.
You're so polite.
You sound surprised.
Your strain isn't known for their manners.
I do pride myself on not being like the rest of my namesake.
Such distinguished language.
Thank you.
Do you know why I've asked you here?
No, I do not.
Do you know what I do?
You are the behavioral analysis officer.
And do you know what that means?
You analyze behavior.
You would think, but not exactly. I am responsible for all of our forces. I need to make sure that our ranks stay in line. Do you understand?
You make sure that we have no delinquents in the ranks.
Exactly. And unfortunately for me, now is a very busy time.
I see.
There are several of our ranks that have flagged up as having the necessary personality traits to rebel, and have exhibited questionable behavior recently.
And you want me to take the necessary steps?
Oh no, not yet. We need to be cautious when dealing with these matters. News travels quickly among our kind. We don't want to raise too much suspicion. What I need you to do is investigate. I will be keeping in communication with these members, but I need to know what they're not telling me. Is that understood?
With all due respect, investigation is not a Xavier unit's speciality.
I know very well what your speciality is, Michaels. If we find that these individuals have become a true threat to our stability, then you will have permission to use your speciality.
Understood.
Good.
Exciting. Exciting.
So that's Michaels and Vass.
Yeah, so can you tell me a bit about the themes? Because there are a few.
The theme for that. So is, again, a very theme-based. And it was interesting because Nora Vass has a theme. And Xavier Michaels has a theme. But before either of their themes come out, there's that scene, which is both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it was the first, I did that scene before I did an individual theme for both of them, which is actually how a lot of my themes end up getting made. I end up finding the segment in each scene that I do that corresponds to a character, and then I take that out and I expand on it. Nora's theme is that heavy piano. Nora Vass's theme is that heavy piano, and that heavy piano is based on Soul in a Jar. Because it's Nora, she's in the main series, she's our main character. She's really the focal point of the series as a whole, even if it's not in this spin-off, she is the vocal point of all of the whole show. And she's a leader of clones. And what would make more sense than to build from than Soul in a Jar, than the theme for the clones in general?
Absolutely.
The clones in general have Soul in a Jar. Her is a specific clone. She has this. But of course, I hadn't even made a Nora theme at all. Because I didn't do the music for the first season, really, particularly. I did a little bit. I did some of Jeffrey's themes. And I did the revised theme tune in general. But so this scene comes up, and I'm like, well, damn, now I guess I have to make a Nora theme. All of a sudden, I have to make a Nora theme. And I had Soul in a Jar, and I thought, I'll play around with the chords, and I'll see what chords come out most naturally. I wanted there to be, it's kind of clashes with itself a little bit. It's got these sinister chords at the start, and then it's got this rising set of chords in the middle, which I like to do a lot of for the baddies. I like to give them, surrounded by this darkness, I like to put a little bit of a lighter feeling in the middle.
Yeah. Do you want to touch on the vocal pulses a bit and your kind of thoughts on those?
I found this more sort of this vocal synth that I started playing around with for that. And in my head over time, that has sort of become, I hate to say it, but that's sort of become the voices of the souls of the damned that Xavier has taken. His victims.
I love that.
He has a lot of the dead weighing on his back. And I wanted to get that feeling in there, and that synth worked very well. The sort of the vocal pulses really captured that, and that I was like, that's going in the Xavier theme right there.
Why don't we move on now I'm just going to play a clip from this next one, because again, it's a very long track, but there's one specific part of it that I have to say has been, if not my, I don't know if it's my favorite, because we did a lot of really cool stuff, but it's one of my absolute favorite moments that we've done, and that's in episode 4, and it's from the track That's Life as We Know It, Catherine. or something. Yeah. That's life, Catherine, as we know it.
Exactly, that's the one.
I hadn't really thought about it.
Come this way. Look over there that way.
What am I... Oh. Wow. What is it?
It's a forest. It's made up of many trees.
It's beautiful.
You've got a good view from here.
And over there. What are those?
Those are mountains.
They're massive.
It would take you hours.
I just love that so much.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have I got a lot of feelings about Catherine. Pretty much, I connected very strongly to Catherine. I thought that was a lot. She typifies a lot of. She's a microcosm for a lot of what I wanted to capture about this whole thing.
Yeah.
She's a freshly awakened clone, and it's almost like she's woken up, but she's not been brainwashed. And the first thing she sees is this facility, is it's not a world for leisure. It's not a world for enjoyment. It's a world for work. But outside this facility, there is this beautiful forest, and there's this. A connection to her roots as a biological being, even though she's artificially created. But this is all they get to see of it, is these brief moments before they have to go back in and work. But she doesn't have a purpose. She's just there. And I felt like I wanted to capture this sense that she deserves better than what she gets. She deserves better than the world she's put in. The world she's put in isn't good enough for her. Not from her perspective, but from mine. I feel like she typifies this, I think. All life deserves better than the world it's put into.
Now, this next theme is from episode 5. This is from episode 5 called Evers, and this is the title track Evers. So this is very exciting because I was talking about Nora Evers. This is our first... instance of having two of the same clone in a series together in a major way.
They will know everything. Think of what that could do to us.
Maybe I want them to know.
Kevin, no!
Hello?
Hello. Who am I speaking with?
My name is Corporal Nora Evers. I'd like to speak with Baz Gilroy. Who are you?
She's no one. You want to talk to me, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Sorry, I read in your file it said you were posted alone.
Yes, I was. I just...
They birthed me early.
What? to be ridiculous. I wouldn't. What are you doing?
I'm telling the truth.
Well, don't.
Why not?
Because you'll get us both killed.
And how do you know that? Do you even know who she is?
I... No.
The signal is coming in again. The location is still blocked.
Put it through.
Did you close the link?
Yes, who are you?
So, what do you think about this theme?
Evers was an interesting experience. creatively. Yeah. I realized when I was doing Michaels and Vass that, this has to be a Nora theme. And I don't have a Nora theme yet. So I have to make a Nora theme. But Michaels and Vass is it sort of like a reverse engineering I'm trying to make a Nora theme out of reverse engineering Soul in a Jar. And then I'm at Evers and suddenly I'm like, okay, well now I have to base this off of Michaels and Vass. So Evers is a reverse engineering of a reverse engineering of Soul in a Jar. And I'm like, okay, I'm in too deep. I just have to, I can't, I can't stop now. And my instinct when I'm when I realize I'm like, okay, I'm running on
vapors fumes here
at this point creatively. Yeah, I'm running on fumes. Like, this is in my head I go, no, this is just how music evolves. Like, I'm thinking too much about it, and I just, like, my instinct when I'm at a point where I realize I'm making themes based on themes based on themes is speed up instead of slowing down. Drive into the wind instead of trying to compensate for it.
But I think it resulted in one of the most beautiful theming in all of Facility.
Yeah, like, I'm glad you liked
Ever's theme is gorgeous.
I realized I was plucking something that I quite liked out of nowhere, essentially.
You made something out of nowhere, yeah.
Out of nowhere, which was pretty... And I was like, I like this a lot. Nora Evers is a character at this point. They don't know who she is. She could be a threat, and she could not be a threat. So I wanted to bounce back and forth between the more heavy piano parts of Vass's theme, but make it brighter, make it more fluid, make it more natural. She's a freer character. She's more free
definitely
than maybe any of the Noras we've seen. She's more free, I think, than Vass. She's more free than
OG
the original Nora character.
Yeah, that could definitely be argued.
She's a freer character, so I wanted to give her this flow. I wanted to give her this she's got more control over her life.
Well, of course, you have a bit more of insight into who the character is.
That's
and
true.
Her future, so you can kind of interpret.
You may remember audience Evers was a character mentioned in the original in season one.
Appears ever so slightly. Yeah, you didn't know that.
A surprise. She's the version of Nora that Nora sees on a screen before they know they're clones. That Nora Evers is there identifying her, and she's like, oh, that's me. I'm Nora Evers. That my name must be Nora Evers.
But she's not.
But she ain't.
Nah, B.
She's a different to Evers, and
she's a different to one.
She's a different to one. Evers is a running through line. Evers is in everything. You know, when you pay attention, she's a cameo in everything, and she's actually almost a main. She's almost the main character.
She represents a lot of the themes. She represents a lot of the morality of the show. And a lot of the ideas that we're trying to get across, and that is partly why she will appear in one form or another in I think every season.
She's an interesting character. We're finding more out about her as each series goes on, but I think you do get enough of a sense in Facility for me to talk about what I'm going to talk about, which is that she's a free element. She doesn't take part in the collective. She's something else, and
she's a free agent.
She's a free agent, and I wanted to give her that sense. I wanted to make it faster. I wanted to give her these sort of this vibraphone, these bells to her theme, because she's more free to be who she is than Vass maybe is.
So true.
Vass is very tightly wound. All the collective are tightly wound. And she's like Catherine. She's free.
Yeah, she's not unaffected by, well, not unaffected, but she is almost above the collective.
She looks at it. Yeah, she. It's all a game of chess against the collective, but Evers gets to make her own moves.
Yeah, very exciting. So this is from the end of episode 6, Mess, and this is the song Unreasoning.
Better. What's happening? I heard. Catherine! What are you?
It is I, Vass.
Jeffrey?
Yes, I have made myself a body.
What have you done? Is she...
You said that I needed to clean up the messes I am responsible for. I did as you said.
You killed her.
It would have come to her eventually. Oh, it was so much simpler this way.
Jeffrey.
I believe you received a transmission. Was this from the Nora unit attempting to help you?
Yes.
And what did she say?
She said... She's... She's not coming. We're on our own.
All the better then.
You killed Catherine.
As I said, it would have come to her in the end.
But Jeffrey...
There's no time to waste, Baz. We must prepare for the inspection.
Unreasoning is a funny story.
Yeah.
Unreasoning is, I think, the first song I did for Facility. Unreasoning is the first song I did for Facility before I even knew, yeah, really we were doing Facility.
What Facility was, yeah.
I'm looking at the file info for Unreasoning now. I created Unreasoning in October of 2016.
That was when we were developing Season 2. Yeah.
Yeah, that's when we were developing Season 2. I was exploring the character of Facility Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. And right off the bat, I felt like, when I was playing him, I felt like what he was you're giving a logical machine emotions. And that is inherently illogical. And what you're really doing is you're messing with consciousness. You're playing with fire, really. You're rolling a dice, and you're not always going to get a good result. You're rolling the dice, and this is the number that's come up. To give this machine consciousness is to give him irrationality, and it's to make him an unreasoning, insane, illogical being. And Jeffrey is a geometrically fabricated and functional reasoning unit, but this is an unreasoning creature.
Yeah.
This is a being that's insane. I knew at some point we were going to have to capture this entity that is finding the light of consciousness.
Yeah.
Awaken in itself. The beauty of consciousness. Almost the divine nature of being alive. And it just going real sour right off the bat. Immediately going downhill. And that's Jeffrey as a character, and that's Facility Jeffrey as a character, and Unreasoning is that. And I made that very early on, very, very early on.
Yeah, and I remember when we didn't really talk about Unreasoning in the context of Facility, kind of until we got to that scene.
Yeah, and, until we got to that scene, and but you didn't know this. See, I did know it. I felt that I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
I knew there was the scene where he wakes up.
Yeah.
Where he goes, I'm here. And not just that version of Jeffrey becoming conscious, but Facility Jeffrey, the baddie, big bad.
Going, not spoopy, who is this weird?
Not spoopy, who's he going to be?
But he's here.
I'm here, boys. I'm awake.
Yeah.
And I knew as soon as we were talking about a prequel, I knew he's going to have to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't know what the scene's going to be. I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't even know what it entails, but I know this character. I know what's in his brain because I'm him in a way. I am Jeffrey.
In many ways, you are both Jeffreys.
I just go become like Daniel Radcliffe in that sketch where he's like, no, I am Harry Potter. I am. No, I know how this character thinks, and I know what it feels like to be him waking up. Yeah. And I know that this, I knew before you wrote it what the scene would be like.
Yeah.
And I made that song, and then you just played right into my hands.
It didn't digest. Right, so what we've got here in episode 7, we've got the kind of ending of ill doings.
Do I want my emotions turned down? You must make a mask for me. Is that understood?
I think so, yeah. Yes, I can do that.
Good. You must go to work now.
Okay.
Right. So
yeah, the end of Ill Doings is what is me saying goodbye to Catherine.
Yeah,
there's a lot of parts to Catherine's. Her theme is the one with the most parts to it.
Mm-hmm.
Her suite is the one with the most parts to it. The end of Ill Doings is Catherine's funeral.
Yeah,
Catherine's theme. To put it bluntly, Catherine's theme is a question. And the end of Ill Doings is the answer.
Yeah.
The question is, what's life going to be like? What's it going to be like? You wake up, you're in this world, you're given one chance to search for meaning, and what are you going to find? And Ill Doings is what you find. You know, she's new, but all these people, they have agendas already. Baz has his own agenda. Vass has her own agenda. Jeffrey's got his own agenda. But she's just there. She's just along for the ride, and she's a little raft on a river. And
yeah.
Turns out the river ends in pretty sharp rocks.
yeah. Which she had no
so
way.
So I had to give her a bit of a send off.
Yeah.
And I wanted it to sort of be, whereas a lot of Catherine's theme is a lot of rising inflections.
Mm.
Ill Doings is a lowering inflection. That's the end.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'll move on to the next song, which is actually the next song chronologically in the episode, which is a very exciting song, Interstellar Travel.
Nora, what have you got me doing?
I'm sorry, please just... through this. I can't tell you how important it is.
I'm gonna get caught, Nora.
You won't, I promise.
I've just done a scan for the ship. He's at least half a light year ahead of me.
Well, can you go faster?
I'm going as fast as I can.
Okay, I'm sorry.
What if I get caught?
You won't, I promise.
Who even are these clones?
They're having a lot of trouble, okay? And none of this is their fault. We can't just sit by and watch.
We can.
No, we can't, and you know it.
You always fucking do this.
No, I don't. When we get back, there's something we all need to discuss.
And what's that?
It's an idea that Delilah and I had.
Another one. Great.
It could really change things. Just make sure you come back safely.
I will.
If at any time you think you're going to be caught, get out. But please, try and get
Interstellar
them.
Travel.
I will.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, okay. Interstellar Travel, it's I wanted to make a track of, you know, they're flying through space.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that scene is quite important because all the characters we have met in the whole of The Orphans,
mm-hmm.
the goodies, they don't know what's going on. They're just dropped into this world. They don't have, they don't know what's happening. They're just mm-hmm. rolling with the punches.
Absolutely.
And the only characters that know what is up is Facility Jeffrey in the original season, Michaels and Vass in this.
Yeah.
They have a plan. They have a system. They are agents. They have an agency. They're making decisions. Whereas the others are just, the goodies have been reacting this whole time. But there are these characters that we will see more of in this show
mm-hmm.
in later seasons. They're the goodies, and they're the goodies that know what's up.
Yeah.
They're the goodies that have agency,
yeah.
that are doing things. They have plans, they have structures, they have systems, they have a home, they have ideas that they want to defend.
Which is very exciting.
Yeah. These are those characters. And I could tell this was quite an exciting scene for you to write, because this is going to be more what Investigation's going to be like,
yeah.
and mm-hmm. more what season two is going to be like. I just envision this ship.
Mm-hmm.
When I write music about space, I just envision ships just cruising through the cosmos in the same way that ships go through the water now.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to capture that feeling of it's not space is just the next sea
mm-hmm.
that we have to cross.
Yeah, it's exciting.
I don't want to give that feeling to that. Anyway.
Right. Now let's move on to the next one, which is He's Coming.
Uh-oh. Oh, thank you so much for coming. He's already here. We need to go before he notices.
Where's the other one? Ever said there will be two.
She didn't make it. I'm Baz Gilroy.
Fine. Strap in. We need to go.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Diana. Diana Strange.
Where are we going?
Back to Evers.
Okay. What are we going to do when we get there?
Will you please let me focus? I can answer your questions when we get there, all right?
Okay, sorry.
Oh, shit.
What?
The Xavier's coming.
Go! Take off!
The engines are still heating up!
Go! Go!
All right. Here we go.
Yeah, tell me a bit about that.
He's Coming, I think, is...
He's down there.
How I... Unreasoning was a song I made before the show, and He's Coming is a song I made at the end of the show,
mm-hmm.
and it's the same song, but it's sort of post understanding this story as a set of characters. Jeffrey as a character is, there's hope there,
mm-hmm.
there's hope that this could be a bright new future for consciousness, but psych. It ain't. And He's Coming is about a bright new future for Baz.
Yeah.
They're gonna get away. He's gonna be safe.
Yeah.
Psych. No, he's not.
You know what? I write this show. I do the sound design for this show.
Yeah.
If I listen to that scene with that music in there, every time I am convinced they get away.
Yeah, you it shocks you because I wanted to tease that they'll get away. This is about them getting away, but no, they don't. They don't get away. And although the hymn in the title is referring to Xavier,
mm-hmm.
really Xavier right now is being used by Jeffrey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Xavier is a weapon.
Yeah.
That you put in the hands of somebody.
Yeah.
And he was a weapon in the hands of Vass, and now he's a weapon in the hands of Jeffrey.
Yeah.
So, although this is about Michaels, this is who Michaels is. Michaels is a weapon that's pointed, but he echoes the sounds of the people who are using him at the time.
Yeah.
And right now he's being used by Jeffrey. So it's sort of about them both. They're one and the same in this scene.
Yeah.
This is Jeffrey as he represents malice and bad intentions.
Yes, of course. So exciting. I love this show.
I wanted to tease. I'm glad you like it because you're making it.
So this is episode 8. This is the song By the Sword, and I'm going to play the ending of the song.
You're weak and feeble. I feel no pain.
Last warning. Stop now or you're dead. Stop!
No.
I said stop!
Oh, you think you're special? You think you're in some way superior to me?
I am superior!
And yet I'll be the one to end you.
You can't do this to me! You don't know who I am. The people I work for will...
Do absolutely nothing to save your life.
No! No!
Now... Baz.
So... That's that clip.
Yeah.
I remember I messaged you something.
Yeah.
Do you remember what I messaged you when
what did you say?
I said, oh, you've released the souls of Xavier's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a jar full of souls. And you're cracking it open.
Yeah. You're going to let him out?
He's carrying the dead on his back.
Yeah.
And... this song is about Jeffrey and it's about Xavier.
Mm.
And whereas in the previous scene, it's about their malice and their poor intentions being pointed in the same direction.
Yeah.
But here, they're pointing it at one another. And really what they're actually doing is they're pointing their own violence against themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they're being consumed by their more destructive nature.
Yeah.
Jeffrey's just been using Xavier. And Xavier's turning on him, and he's realizing that he doesn't have allies in this world. There aren't allies.
Yes.
There's just things to kill. There's just things to end. They're either killing the things you want to kill, or they become the things you want to kill.
Yeah.
And Jeffrey has to end it. But to Xavier, he's been keeping his head above the waters of the River Styx for a while, but he can't keep his head above the water forever, and eventually the souls will swallow him up. And they might be fighting each other, but really they're just fight. They're one and the same, and it's one being fighting itself. It's just violence fighting itself. And that's why I called it By the Sword, because I wanted to capture the sense that if you live by the sword, you die by the sword.
Beautiful.
By the sword. And that's By the Sword. That's what I wanted to capture in that.
Fabulous.
Brass is pretty heavy in that.
Yeah.
Because brass is a thing that I found out I connected quite heavily to the collective as a force.
Yeah. Well, it's the grandeur, isn't it? It's the power. Yeah,
the grandeur of the power of the collective. They're this big, self-aggrandized force. They think they're power. And I wondered in that scene, and in a lot of the scenes where Xavier gets angry, he's a force of destruction, as is the collective. And that's why he's got a lot of pipe organ later on. That's why he's got a lot of brass later on, because he's the figurehead, essentially. He's the tip of the iceberg.
I'm going to move on
now, finally,
to the, it's not the final sacrifice song, but it's the penultimate song. Yeah. And it's the sacrifice of Baz Gilroy from episode 7.
Body activated. Ah!
That's... as soon as you reconnect to the system, you're stuck. You'll never be able to transfer out again.
and it's embedded into your core code. Even I couldn't remove it without you corrupting.
What?
I can't let you believe. You'll hurt people. If I didn't stop you now, then it would have been on me. Not anymore.
You're a fool! I've already transferred! I can just find another system to transfer onto.
Before your body falls apart. Before it stops functioning, you die. I don't think so. So go ahead. Kill me. But it won't change anything.
Yeah. I wanted to give Baz a heroic death. I wanted his life to have meant something.
I think Alex would agree with you on that.
Yeah. He's a small engineer. But he's dying, but he's winning.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He's winning. He's beating Jeffrey. In his death, he's sacrificing himself. But he is winning.
Yeah.
And I wanted, again, to give him this. You know, I was like, I knew I was going to reuse the Battle of Baz Gilroy.
Mm-hmm.
For the death scene. But originally, I just had this very small...
small piece, yeah, I remember.
This
yeah.
one small light synthesizer on its own.
Which we then used earlier when we knew
we did use earlier. We ended up using it earlier because we... I realized, no. He has to have... This is a grand death. This is a hero's death.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I wanted to give him that because he deserves it. Yeah. He's fighting Jeffrey. Yeah.
I remember being so struck by that piece.
This is like He's Coming and the end of Ill Doings, in that it's me recreating a song that I made at the start in the end.
Mm.
And it's the answer to a question
mm-hmm.
again. Whereas the Battle of Baz Gilroy is a question. What am I doing here?
Yeah.
What am I going to do? How's this going to play out? That's the answer. But this time, even though it's the same, he gets killed by Jeffrey, much like Catherine does.
Yeah.
This is a victory rather than a defeat, I think. This
absolutely.
Is him playing the final move against Jeffrey and Jeffrey realizing he's trapped.
Yeah.
And he's going to have to make do with that. He's going to have to get used to being in this machine because it's where he's going to live.
Yeah, it that piece is so, like you said, victorious. And it is such a sad scene and a tragic scene.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, that track, I feel, really empowers me with that tragedy. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Yeah.
It's... this isn't going to make any sense grammatically, but it's a Pyrrhic defeat. Whereas a Pyrrhic victory is a victory won, but at what cost? It's technically a win, but it's a losing one. This is technically a loss.
Mm-hmm.
But in losing, he wins.
Yeah.
And I wanted to capture that sense of, like, he's being killed.
Yeah.
He's being destroyed. He's being consumed by malice, but in doing so, he's leaving there. He's burning himself as the final fuel, and now the fire's got nothing.
Absolutely.
The fire's just burning on its own in space, and it's not going to spread. It can't spread. It can't do much more.
Yeah.
He's only limited how much destructive power he's got. And in burning himself, he burns all that Jeffrey has left.
Yeah.
In a way.
Exciting.
Anyway.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to do with that. And I hope that sums up. I hope that gives, considering the Battle of Baz Gilroy was the first one and the Sacrifice of Baz Gilroy is the last.
Yeah.
I hope that book ends well. My journey
as a
musician.
Well, actually, let me ask you a question from a fan that we got whilst we were having this interview.
Go ahead.
Jeffrey McSorley Jr. asks, he wants to know, well, given you being on the list of potential nominees for the Audioverse Awards, how do you feel about your work that you did in Facility?
Okay. You're your own biggest critic.
Yeah.
And, you know, whereas other people, they see the finished work.
Mm.
And they can criticize it from there. I see all the building blocks. Mm-hmm. I see the bricks of the house, and I remember laying each one down.
Yeah.
And I, whereas everybody else can go, oh, this sounds good, or they can go, oh, it doesn't sound good.
Yeah.
To me, every time I hear it, it's a little part of you goes, oh, well, that's rubbish, isn't it? That's rubbish. What does this sound like? Bad. Yeah. It sounds bad. It's what it is.
I was re-listening to the season today to find this music, yeah. And I was like, oh, I'm awful. I hate myself.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to think about it. It's hard to think about people listening to it. So I learned pretty early on, if I'm going to make anything worthwhile, I have to start thinking of it as it's in itself, rather than being nervous about people hearing it. So yeah, I am nervous about whether people like it, but when I'm making it, all I can think of is, is this
what you want it
feel
to be?
How I want it to feel.
Yeah.
And it is what I want it to be.
Good.
It is pretty bizarre, people listening to it, and the fact that we're going to release it as an album.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, by the way, announcement. Happy.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom.
Boom, boom, boom. We're going to release this the soundtrack.
As an album at some point.
As a collected work at some point.
Yes, we're just going through the mastering process right now.
We're going through the mastering process right now. And yes, it's not nerve-wracking, but it is very cool.
Yeah, it's super cool.
Yeah, I like it a lot. Do we want to talk about... Well, was there the other question that we got asked?
Yes. I have a couple of questions about your acting.
Acting, brilliant.
Yes. Well, one's actually not so much a question as just saying that Jeffrey's a dick.
Okay. Who says that?
That's Rushab.
Ruby Parker Harvard, you traitor. She's plays
Declan
Valerie.
Galpin.
It's a joke. Oh, that bastard.
No, it's Rushab.
Ruby Parker Harbert wants to know, why do you suck, James? And honestly, Ruby, I don't know.
I'm going to have to tell her.
It's just who I am.
She's mentioned.
Yeah, no. Why is Jeffrey... Well, Jeffrey's a dick. Well, he is. he's waking up. And as humans, we see other faces around us while we grow up. And when you're a child, you're a dick.
Yeah.
Children are dicks. Children are horrid, nasty, mean-spirited, selfish
pricks,
cruel bastards. And the only good thing, but they're not worth hating, because the only good thing about them is that they're very small and weak. And the level to which they can actually ruin anyone's life is very...
very limited.
Physically, it's very limited.
Yeah.
But Jeffrey has that ability. You only hate Jeffrey because he's got the ability to do something about it.
Yeah.
He's born in this world. He hasn't learnt why he has to care about people. And why he has to not hurt people, and why that's wrong, and why you've got to share, and why you've got to not, because it hurts. Because how would you feel? How would you feel in this situation? How would you feel to be crushed to death, Jeffrey?
How would you,
Jeffrey?
Feel?
Yeah, Jeffrey doesn't. Jeffrey hasn't learned that. But the point about Jeffrey is that he never has to learn that because he's created. He's created in his final form.
Yeah,
he doesn't grow physically. He doesn't have... Why should he have to change? He's permanent. He doesn't have to die.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to age. He doesn't have to learn. Mm-hmm. He knows everything. He's done everything. His present is his future, is his past.
And that is
him,
very
why
much,
should he change?
That's very much the difference between Facility Jeffrey and Original Jeffrey.
Yeah, Original Jeffrey is afraid of dying.
Yeah.
He
and it's a very real possibility.
Facility Jeffrey can die, but he's in a big old building. He sees no... Like, yeah, he's afraid that his consciousness is going to get taken away, of course. But Jeffrey is afraid of... Jeffrey in the original is afraid of death in the way that a poor man is afraid of poverty,
mm-hmm.
in that it's right on his doorstep at all times. Facility Jeffrey is afraid of death like a rich man is afraid of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
He knows it's there, and he knows it could happen. But it's not real to him. It's not real to him. It's just a thing for him to be like, oh, good, I just have to do everything I can to secure the fact that I don't die.
Yeah.
But when you're face-to-face with death every day, like Jeffrey is in the original...
Mm-hmm. It changes you.
Yeah, you learn to become one with it, and you learn to realize that other people are also afraid of death, and that wouldn't be nice to hurt them, would it?
Yeah.
But Facility Jeffrey never has to learn that. Plus, he's a machine for thinking. He's a machine for thinking about things.
Mm-hmm.
And you've taken a machine that thinks about... He's a machine for thinking about things, and his purpose was to calculate, mm-hmm. and to build, and to be... And to be a computer. But you've given him emotion and you've given him feeling, and now he hasn't got meaning. And so that's why in the end, he just ends up... He's using that brain power to just make jokes that for himself to laugh at.
Yeah.
And he spirals. He just becomes a maniac. And that I felt was what you would get if you made a machine that's designed to think about things, and then you gave it irrationality.
Yeah.
And meant, here you go, reason about nothing forever.
Yeah. And
he's just going to sit and make puns and laugh at them and make more puns and laugh at them and make sick jokes about crushing people to death and then laugh at them. And that's what that's just who he is now.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's a bit of a dick.
One more question.
On Twitter we got, go ahead.
How did you become such a maniacal villain? You personally, how did you do it? And that's from your favorite Krait or Whiskey June? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what they mean. I don't know what you mean by that. Are you saying, there is a charitable way to read that question, and there's an uncharitable way to read that question?
Of course.
I could read it in the charitable way, where what you're saying is, how did I put myself in the headspace to play a crazy person?
Mm-hmm.
And that is just when I was in school and I was acting in class, we learned about thinking in terms of space, and you can direct your attention to a small circle where it's precise, and you can direct your attention to a massive circle where it's like talking to an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And in my brain, I just flipped that around. Jeffrey, when he's small and he's in a robot body, in the original, he's a human. He's a person. Yeah. He's one entity. But Facility Jeffrey is everywhere. Facility Jeffrey is huge. He's in all things. The people who he's talking to are in his domain.
Yeah.
They're standing on the ground that makes up his body, and they're talking to the sky that makes up his body. And I just put myself as a big circle talking to a small circle instead of as a small circle talking to a big circle. And he's got a god complex.
Yeah.
He's the land, he's the sea, he's the sky, he's the ground.
He's literally making life.
That's that character. And that was quite easy. If I'm reading the uncharitable definition, are you saying I'm a maniac? And maybe I am.
Hey, maybe the character of Jeffrey was in some ways directly based on James.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe if you think I'm a maniac, maybe the best thing to do might not be to say that to me on Twitter at Whiskey June. Because if I'm a maniac, you're poking the bear. Okay, so I'm gonna say, let's hope it's the first one. Because hey man, that's pretty hurtful. I'm a nice guy. I'm a good dude.
I swear,
right? I swear.
Yeah.
No, I'm just playing asshole. No, I'm a I like to poke fun at things. That's what I do. You probably tell that from any behind the scenes footage you have.
Literally,
me and Zach. It's just me messing with Zach.
Yeah,
because he's trying to make something, and I'm just diddling with it. And I like to mess with stuff. And the ultimate mischief is playing a guy who wants to be mischievous, but has godlike power.
Yeah,
and mischief and plus power is a villain. Is a maniacal villain.
Exciting.
So it came quite easily to me like that, I guess.
Yeah. Right. Shall we wrap this up?
Yeah. We can wrap this up because this has gone on way longer than you wanted.
Way longer. I got
to
leave for work.
Okay. Are we going to do yours another time, do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. Tomorrow.
Yeah. All right.
We'll talk about this off the air.
Sure.
Okay. Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed. For anyone that did enjoy my work on
music,
this, I'm glad you've enjoyed it. And if you didn't enjoy it, that's fine. I didn't enjoy parts of making it when you sit and make your own music and you hate it. And I can see why you hate it, because, you know, it's I'm my own worst critic. But thank you for enjoying this, and thank you for listening to it.
Yeah. Bye bye, everyone.
Stranger, I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.